as well as Metro Access. And she talked about the new shields and how effective they are, and also about the new cameras that are going on for protection of the drivers, and of course, the rear bus boarding and the no fare, which again, all are things that will help protect the drivers. But you can go ahead, it's online now, it's on YouTube, and it's very easy to follow.
I'll check with you later, Phil.
Okay.
But there are other matters too regarding the rear door boarding, front door boarding, and what can be done to ensure that wheelchair users and people using walkers, etc., can easily get aboard. We should look into that. Maybe there's some solutions we could recommend if there are.
Well, actually, the general manager has already sent memos out to everybody for walkers, canes, mobility devices using the front to board the bus. So they addressed that, and since then, we've had no negative follow-up or complaints. And we can see what the ombudsman, if he has had any since then.
Has anybody else besides Phil been able to see what he just described? Well, hearing none, maybe Phil, I can chat with you about how we can get that report and share it with the committee.
Well, I can send out the website.
Okay, very good.
You know?
Yeah.
This is Anthony.
Sure.
I just want to ask a quick question about the I understand the overall concept of the handbook for buses, but since the process is much more frequent than the train handbook, I think we should really drill down eventually, you know, what kind of things we're going to talk about and what kind of things are changed on buses within that yearly process, because it occurred to me when thinking about this that there may be less overall things that we could influence given that the process is once a year. Yeah. So that's just one thing I wanted to bring up. I mean, I still think that doing a handbook is a good idea so that we can get our thoughts and ideas out there. But I think it's going to be a little bit different than the rail handbook since the process is much more frequent.
Right. Let me also add that there are 8 other bus systems serving our metropolitan Washington area. So I see the handbook as being not a guide only for what WMATA has done or will do, but what other buses might consider. I know that, for example, the ride-on buses which serve Montgomery County are designed in such a way that it might be difficult to get, say, 2 wheelchairs on board. On the other hand, the DC circulator, according to what Heidi Case told me a couple of months ago, can get up to 4. And I think she was on board with 3 wheelchair users. So it's these things, not just aimed at WMATA alone, but can be shared with the other 8 jurisdictions. And if there was some way of putting it online, other systems around the country could see. We might be a leader in this, who knows? In any event, we have to do further work. I know you're in a new job, so I wouldn't want to put the burden on you to do the kind of research you did for us all earlier regarding rail cars. But given the kind of time that I have and some of you else have. Is that somebody who's... somebody needs to be muted. But anyway, I would be willing to look into the old records and look at the materials that Phil has mentioned, etc. But the bottom line is that we're doing a kind of ideal version of accessibility for any rail car, not just WMATAs, but we might do it as well for any buses, not just WMATAs. Yes.
This is Carol Lopez.
Yes, I hear.
I wanted to clarify something. Although we procure buses on a yearly basis, it's not, we don't redesign them like in the rail car. It's just something, it's a process that basically order the same car with some improvements. So you do have a lot of, your input about how to improve these is extremely good. It would be very welcome. However, as Anthony said, it's not going to be like they're designing it from scratch, or at least designing it extensively like the rail cars. However, all of your information will always be helpful for as we proceed on to procurement projects for the buses.
Okay. Well, your interest is in what WMATA does or has done or will do. And I'm saying that there are other jurisdictions which may be able to use some of our ideas.
Absolutely.
Anyone else? Any other comments?
Tina, this is Phil.
Yes.
Two suggestions. What Carol says is absolutely correct. But there are things that occur from several organizations in designing better accessible buses and vans, and they're published online. You can follow, you can do a Google search and have it sent, and then presenting them in the monthly meetings to the board is a good way to put the information out in public. Carol will follow up because she's very good at this. She's all the same. Buffalo and Michigan.
Static.
The other thing that I would suggest is all of the local districts have accessibility advisory committees that handle transportation. I know we have one in Arlington. There's one in Montgomery. There's one in Alexandria. And so when we make a presentation to our board, we might forward the appropriate recommendation to the different local advisory boards for the different agency. And I see Anthony has his hand up, so I'll stop talking and let him go.
Yeah, I think this is Anthony. I'm sorry. I think that's more what I was getting at, is that, you know, we are an advisory committee for WMATA. And so the way I think we should approach this is, I think we should try to help influence other, you know, jurisdictions, but we should probably do that, as Phil is suggesting, through their jurisdictional, our counterparts on those jurisdictions. I think we run the risk of scope creep, you know, it for lack of a better term, if we start from the get-go looking at different jurisdictions.
Well, obviously, if we could consult with some of them, I'm sure that the other jurisdictions would be happy to share what they have done in their areas. And we might find that there are some gaps from one jurisdiction to the other. And in kind of devising an ideal handbook, it might be useful not only, or maybe not to WMATA itself, but to many other people. If you know of anyone on these other advisory committees in different jurisdictions, let us know, and I'll contact them and see how they can help us and we help them. Anthony, I don't have the agenda in front of me. Could you bring it up again?
Chair Calabia, this is Anu. We do have Mark Phillips. He just joined us.
Oh, good. So
we can go back to his topic, and he can provide us with his presentation about the Blue, Orange, Silver Line's capacity and reliability study. Mark?
Everybody.
Hi. Welcome.
Thank you. Sorry for the late join. I had some mixed wires miscommunication on my end. I'm going to try to share my screen. If you don't see it, please speak up and let me know, and I'll figure out what else to do. Let's see if this works. Okay. Can everybody see that?
We are seeing your screen, yes.
Yes. Uh-huh.
All right. So there are a couple members in your group who are actually on our stakeholder committee or have been invited to some of the meetings here, and some of you might have come to our public meetings in December or engaged in our online survey and some other material we had on our website. But the Blue Orange Silver Capacity and Reliability Study has been going on for about a year now, and it is an attempt, that was from the public meetings, to address some of the major pressing issues that we have on three of the busiest metro rail lines. For those of you who know, and I'm sure that's pretty much everybody on the call, we run all three of these lines, the Blue, Orange, and Silver lines, through one tunnel and set of tracks between the Potomac River and the Anacostia River, basically. There was a lot of good reasons for doing that when the metro system was designed and developed, but it also creates a very real capacity constraint on the number of trains that we can move through the system.
Mark?
Yeah.
This is Anu. There is some background noise, so we are not able to hear you very clearly.
But I hear that, but I don't think it's on my end. So if anybody...
Yeah, it's someone else. Can everyone mute themselves, please?
Well, go ahead, Mark.
I am going to mute everyone at this point. Mark, you will have to unmute yourself, okay?
You got it.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Okay, hopefully that works. Can you give me a thumbs up, Anu, if you can hear me? Okay. All right, running these three lines through one tunnel, one set of tracks is a huge capacity constraint in terms of the number of trains we can operate, run through the Roslyn Tunnel, which means we can't actually meet the demand for ridership that we have today, let alone in the future. And also, for those of you who are Blue, Orange, and Silver customers, it creates a real reliability issue for us that if there's one problem on one train, on one line, it cascades to the other two. So it impacts all three of them. And if the service problem is bad enough, it can actually impact even the green and the blue lines because the yellow is in line with both of those. So these are issues that Metro's known about for at least two decades. And we have kind of looked at either system-wide plans, like the core capacity analysis to try to figure out how we can take care of some of our system-wide issues, or we've done really limited feasibility studies on individual projects that might solve this, but we've never as a region or as an agency agreed on what one fix should be, like on a comprehensive corridor strategy. So that was the purpose of this two-year alternatives analysis, to look at all the purpose and need, to look at all the data that tells us what our constraints are and what we're going to need in the future, and then try to come up with a corridor strategy of long-term and short-term options, capital, like investment, infrastructure options, as well as operating, and try to put that forward in a project development. This is a map that shows our study area that we're looking at. It's basically a 2-mile radius around the entirety of the Orange Line from Vienna all the way to New Carrollton, the Silver Line from the end of Phase 2 when it opens in Ashburn and Loudoun County out to Largo Town Center, and then the Blue Line from Largo as far south as Pentagon. I was asked this question fairly often by stakeholders, not so much within WMATA, but outside stakeholders. Why now? You know, we had just gotten out of the SafeTrack program. We have a lot of operational issues that we're really improving on, and we need to keep our eye. Like, we got the dedicated funding. I think everybody knows about that from the three states, but that has to be focused almost entirely on state of good repair and maintenance. So people are like, why are you doing this study now? And this graphic is a pretty good example or like an explanation of why we have to at least get the planning work started today, because something like the silver line, which is what this graphic represents. This is the planning horizon of how long it took to plan, fund, get the legal work out of the way, get the environmental work out of the way, and the construction for Silver Line Phase 1. It's a 22 to 23 year timeline. So if this study says that we need a major metro rail project to fix the problems in the Bloomberg to Silver Corridor, we're not looking at like a 2 to 5 year project. It's more of a 10 to 20 year project. And we have to start planning for that now before the problems continue to build and just get worse in the future.
Well,
I verbally discussed this a little bit, but I like this graphic because it kind of shows you the reliability issues I was talking about, that by running those three lines through this one tunnel instead of tracks, again, if there's a problem, like you can see over the diagram on the right-hand side of your screen, it just cascades. If there's a problem on the blue line, it's going to impact the orange and silver.
Mark, not to disturb you, but one of the interpreters need to switch, so let's give them a moment.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Just give me a thumbs up whenever you're ready.
Sure. For everyone joining via the phone call, just to let you know that the interpreters are communicating with Mr. Rico Dancy. As soon as they are ready for the interpretation, we will continue. Okay, Mark, we are ready.
Okay, so I think I was saying at the time that this graphic is kind of showing that reliability issue that I mentioned verbally, that there's a problem on one line, like the blue, it'll impact the orange and silver lines. And I wanted to note that that's not just an impact or a matter of the train service that's running through, but also it creates crowding on our platforms, it creates crowding on our escalators and our stairways. So it creates actually dangerous situations, not just customer, you know, dissatisfaction and a bad experience. And because the yellow line is interlined with the blue and the yellow is also interlined with the green, if it's a severe enough disruption, it can actually impact the entire system aside from the red line. And because we got that dedicated funding, we know that we're going to have a lot of state of good repair and maintenance work in the near future and the foreseeable future. And that's going to require consistent work zones. That's going to require occasional single tracking and weekend shutdowns. But we don't have the infrastructure in place, like pocket tracks and crossovers, to easily get around those type of shutdowns or to make make their footprint smaller and easier to manage. So through this project, we'd also like to look at not just the capacity issue of how to get more trains through the tunnel, but how to give us more flexibility and how to move trains around the system and just be able to respond to incidents in a more timely fashion. But when a lot of people hear me talk about capacity, look at the rail ridership that we have had recently and the fact that it had been falling over the last couple of years, and they say, why? You know, why do you really need to worry about the service you're providing, the service levels, like how many trains you can put through Roslyn? And the fact of the matter is we do. We know, we have every reason to believe that the region is going to grow exponentially over the next 20, 25 years. We know there's a huge demand for housing. There's a huge demand for jobs. These forecasts that you see on the screen come from our partners at the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments. They're expert demographers. And they believe that by 2045, we're going to have 1.5 million new people in the region, and 650,000 new households, and 1.1 million new jobs. A lot of that growth is actually going to go in that 2-mile study area that I showed you. That study area is going to grow by 37% in population and 30% in jobs. And that's going to translate to an 18% increase in ridership on the Blue, Orange, and Silver lines, or almost 40,000 new riders every single day. And the problem is it, you can see, I'm going to go through these kind of quickly. We actually already have crowding on the Orange and Silver lines between Courthouse and Roslyn that exceed Metro's board adopted service standards. We have a set standard under Metro's regulations or Metro's policies about how many passengers we can have on a rail car to make it comfortable and safe. We already exceed that at the prime point between Courthouse and Roslyn. By 2040, that problem is going to be critical between Roslyn, Courthouse and Roslyn, and the overcrowding is going to extend all the way from Ballston to McPherson Square and down to Pentagon. So the fact of the matter is, when ridership grows, when we already have this capacity crunch, there's no way the existing system is going to be able to keep up with that or allow us to put up deploy enough trains through that tunnel to carry that ridership. And we've looked at it, and we know that we're trying to move towards the 100% eight-car train program, so making sure that every car is a full eight-car train. Even that won't solve the problem. Helps, but it doesn't solve it. And part of this problem is, again, the cause of the problem is the interlining I talked about before. We have like a theoretical max capacity of 26 trains per hour in one direction through any tunnel or set of tracks. That 26 trains an hour, when you have the three lines running through between Roslyn and Stadium Armory, that can be split up relatively evenly under the current 8-minute peak schedule with about seven to eight trains per hour on each of the three lines. But we can't increase frequency on any of those lines without decreasing it on another one. If you could see like the example to the left under the 6-minute headway, this is what we actually ran up until 2017 when we moved to the 8-minute peak schedule. When we were running 6-minute headways, we were able to do 10 or 11 trains per hour on the Orange and the Silver lines, but that meant we had to cut the Blue Line service down to 5 trains an hour or every 12 minutes. And that led to extreme crowding on the Blue Line and a lot of dissatisfied customers. So this constraint, this 26 trains per hour, is not something that we can improve or surpass with the existing system the way it is. Finally, so I've talked about reliability, I've talked about capacity and our needs there. We also have the opportunity to build more flexibility into the system and make it more cost-effective to the taxpayers. A lot of you know that for the most part, we have to run trains end-to-end from rail yard to rail yard or from terminal to terminal. We used to have what we call turnbacks or short turns on the red line at Grosvenor and Silver Spring, on the yellow line at Mount Vernon. We've never really had the ability to do that with the Blue, Orange, and Silver lines. And people might question why you'd want to. It's all a matter of how expensive it is to run the trains. You know, it costs the same amount of money to run a train from one terminal to another, no matter how many people are riding. But clearly, as that graphic on the top shows you, if you have more people riding, you're actually asking for less money or less subsidy from the jurisdictions who pay for the system. It's better for everybody if you have more people riding. But we tend to have this pattern where a lot of people are riding Metrorail from the suburban areas into the DC core, but not necessarily out to the back out to the suburbs. You know, most of the lines come in, go through the core, and then go back out to the suburbs. When they go from the core to the suburbs, they're pretty empty, but it's still costing us a lot of money to provide that service. So the solutions are either to have a lot more transit-oriented development around stations on those areas where the trains run pretty empty, because that might create new ridership, like reverse commute demand of people coming back out there and actually going from their jobs to those homes, or at least, you know, coming in from suburban areas that don't have high ridership. It would help us gain ridership and fare box revenue. If we can't get enough new ridership from development, we would also like to explore the ability to have the infrastructure that would let us turn back trains, kind of like we used to do on the red line during peak hours. We don't have that on the Orange and Silver lines. Finally, we'd like to be a sustainability champion. Metro has these targets from our energy action plan for 2025, and any of the projects that we recommend through the study should further these goals. Not necessarily the percentages you see, because those are set for 2025, and we're talking about a project for like 2040, 2045, but they should further these general goals: increasing regional transit ridership, encouraging mode shift from the private automobile, lowering our energy use and our water usage and gas and greenhouse gases per vehicle. And frankly, it should also help sustain transit-oriented development, like smart growth and expanded access to opportunity. So what you're seeing now is all that purpose and need that I just talked about, all of those issues that we're struggling with, kind of turned into goal statements. So these four goals are what any project recommended by the Blue, Orange, and Silver Studies should attain. So these will be the goals that we use to try to craft a corridor strategy and decide which projects are part of that corridor strategy. Goal one is to provide the sufficient rail capacity to meet that future ridership demand that I showed you earlier. Goal two is to improve reliability and on-time performance. Goal three is to improve our operational flexibility and our cost efficiency. And goal four is to provide or to support sustainable development, transit-oriented development, and access to opportunity. This study, this graphic needs to be updated a little bit. Sorry about that. Like I said, it's a two-year study that kind of started in spring of 2019, where we're doing a lot of stakeholder development and in-house planning. And between summer and fall, we were identifying everything I just ran through: the purpose and need statements, what issues we were dealing with, what opportunities we were dealing with. And then between in the fall and winter, we came up with a big set of project concepts or initial ideas of projects that might make it into that corridor strategy. Where we are now is actually that third box between winter and spring of 2020, where we're evaluating those concepts. So we went to the public in December. We had an online survey. We had a bunch of, well, we had some open houses where people were able to engage in like a mapping exercise and let us know what they wanted to see and share their own ideas. And now we're trying to take that huge universe of ideas, and we're talking, there were hundreds of them, and narrow them down to a set of like four or six that we could really do a deep dive analysis on. And by the end of the summer, we should be coming back to the public with a draft corridor strategy for public input. So kind of keep that on your calendars. It'll probably be sometime in October. And all that will culminate with the selection of, in geeky transit terms, it's called a locally preferred alternative, but basically it's that corridor strategy I'm talking about, which, as you can see with the list at the bottom, the target outcomes, it should be regional consensus. So not just WMATA saying, but not just Metro saying these are the projects we want to build, but consensus from all the stakeholders that we've engaged so far, that they agree and that they want us to put up, to devote the resources to moving these forward. We're looking for board approval of that preferred solution, as well as a funding and implementation plan. This is our public engagement strategy. Like I said, back in the summer, we kind of did raising issues and awareness, letting people know that the study was happening. How long, we passed out like one page summaries about what we were gonna be doing. And we did pop-ups at like 13 or 14 Metrorail stations. Round two, as I described over the winter, was alternatives. So focused on our initial concept, our initial ideas, and then asking the public what they thought and giving us their ideas. And then round three, which we'll be doing in the fall, is really looking at that corridor strategy, the projects included in it, and the full cost-benefit analysis, and trying to get our stakeholders and our public to get as close to consensus as we can before we take it to the board of directors. I won't belabor this too much. This is a graphic that kind of shows all the different stakeholder committees that we've been engaging, so it's not just a Metro planning exercise. We do have two Metro committees. One is a leadership advisory committee that's made up of our upper level policy leaders and executive management, and then a technical advisory committee that's consists of technical experts, basically, on the operational, engineering, and planning side. On the community side, we have a strategic advisory group that's made up of upper level executives and policymakers at our partner transportation agencies, some large regional planning agencies, as well as some nonprofits, and land use planning agencies. And then there's also the technical advisory group on the external side that's the same, but like they're technical experts, as well as a business and community advisory group. And this is the one where there's some representatives from your group right now who serve on this, as well as large nonprofits, regional agencies, economic development agencies, and business improvement districts. And over all of that, kind of as an umbrella, is what we're calling an executive committee of all of the elected officials, all the local elected officials along that entire corridor. We're only going to meet with them probably 3 times through the course of the study because it's elected officials and they can be really hard to get time on their calendars. But we've had 2 of those meetings so far. We'll have at least 1 more. And so far we've gotten really good engagement, more so than I think a lot of projects tend to. Don't really need to go through the slide because it's what we did. Okay. If you'll bear with me 1 second, I'm going to try to find another one that shows you the concepts that we talked about at the open house. There's not a whole lot more.
Yes. Hello? Hi, Marybeth.
Hi, the interpreter. We're just going to switch if that's okay.
Okay. Mark?
Yeah.
So we'll just take an extra moment while you look for what you're looking for. The interpreters will swap.
Sounds good.
Okay, thank you.
We just have a couple minutes, and I'll just update people with where we are and then open it up for questions.
Okay. Okay, go ahead. And we'll pause, when you tell us what's a good time for us to pause, and at that time they will be able to change.
Oh, okay. So at the public meetings in December, we presented, can you see my screen still?
Yes.
Okay. We presented a range of what we're calling 6 Metrorail concepts, as well as some general system improvements. And I just want to keep in mind or like ask people to understand that this is the first set of very high level draft concepts that we put out there. They have been changed since, but we're not ready to take the new stuff out to the public yet. Concept 1 was those train turnbacks I mentioned, like we used to have on the Red Line around Grosvenor and Silver Spring. We were just looking at different places along the combined Blue, Orange, and Silver corridor where we might be able to do something. So that was like around West Falls Church is option A. Around East Falls Church was option B. C was around at the Boston Station. Option D would have been at Roslyn, and option E is the D&G Junction that's over the Anacostia River. This doesn't help capacity in terms of like moving more trains through that Roslyn Tunnel, but it would give us flexibility in deploying different service patterns depending on the ridership levels. It would also give us the ability to respond to incidents faster and to slot swap. So for instance, if we found most of the ridership demand was on the Orange Line and not so much on the Silver, that's just an example, it's not necessarily true. Mm-hmm. We could turn back the Silver Line and assign its slots through Roslyn to the Orange Line. So the Silver Line customers would transfer, but most of the trains going through would be Orange. It's just an example, but it's something we need to look at. Concept 2 was what we were calling a Nova Circulator, and that added a new Roslyn 2 station directly adjacent and connected by a pedestrian tunnel to the existing Roslyn station. And then either using it to turn back the blue line, that's option A, or option B, creating a new inner line connection between the Orange and Silver at Courthouse and Arlington Cemetery so that Orange and Silver Line trains could continue off into the core like they do now, or some of them could turn south and go towards Crystal City. Again, like the other turnbacks, this does nothing for the capacity issue, but it gets flexible operations because we heard from a lot of our Virginia stakeholders that they were interested with Amazon HQ2 and the continued development of Crystal City of having flexibility to have more service south towards Crystal City. Concept 3 is something that might be familiar to some people who've been engaged in metro planning exercises for a while now. This is what we're calling the new blue line connections. So there'd be that same new Roslyn 2 station and then 2 options for extending the blue line out of the current alignment that goes like this. It could go through Georgetown, up around either M or P Street through DC, and then swing down to hit Union Station, and then further east on its new alignment into Prince George's County. Another option we talked about with the public was taking it through Georgetown and then going up Wisconsin Avenue towards Bethesda. Concept 4 was a new core loop, which builds that same Roslyn 2 station and that new line through Georgetown, M Street or P Street through downtown DC, going to Union Station and then wrapping back through the waterfront, Southwest waterfront area to Pentagon. So this would be kind of a closed loop system that would be removed from the current Orton Silver lines.
Excuse me, Mark?
Yeah?
Just to make sure we are seeing what you want us to see. I'm looking at a slide but that says draft project concepts. Is that what we should be looking at?
Hold on.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
Should be seeing, let me see if I can do this. Are you seeing concept four, new blue loop, new core loop now?
Now, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, so you heard me verbally, so I'm just gonna run through real quick. These were the turnbacks, option one.
Okay.
Option two was that Nova circulator I mentioned that would send, create connections between the blue line and the orange and silver so they could move between each other.
Mm-hmm.
Concept three was that new blue line, a completely new blue line from Roslyn 2 station, either through downtown DC to Union Station off to Prince George's County or up Wisconsin Avenue towards Bethesda. That's the option B here. Concept four, which is where I left off, is a new core loop. So that kind of same alignment that you saw here with the new blue line, but wrapping down to Union Station and then through the waterfront back to Pentagon. And it would be both the blue and yellow lines creating this loop instead of the yellow line continuing further up north. Then concept five was new silver line realignments north of I-66. And we have three different options here. I don't think I need to go through in a lot of detail, but basically it was a new connection from either, or a new line from either McLean or West Falls Church going through Fairfax County into DC. Two of the options would have come closer to the downtown core of DC, like around M or P Street. And one of them was way further by like Tenleytown or Friendship Heights and coming down to Prince George's County. And then we had a set of similar options, but south of I-66, serving Virginia 7 and Columbia Pike, and then either going up to the waterfront area or curving back down to Crystal City and National Airport. So that was the full set of Metrorail options that we presented to the public to get their feedback. But we also asked them about some more general types of system improvements that would give us, that would help us meet those four goals and the purpose and need, but weren't specific to a location the way Metro Rail lines are. And those are putting new pocket tracks and crossovers in the system just to help us with reliability and flexibility. Maybe look at reconfiguring train seats so we can fit more people on the trains without violating our service standards. Enhancing bike and pedestrian and bus connections to the stations so make it easier to get to them and out of them. And then expanding the core stations here is really about adding new vertical circulation capacity on the platforms to make it faster when really crowded trains come into the station to get people up and off into the mezzanines before the next train comes so that we don't run into like really crowded platforms and stations like a Foggy Bottom. There's enhanced train control, which is something that we should consider or look at. That's like high-tech communications-based train control that can send the signals directly between the trains rather than relying on like the track, the signal and switches that we have today. And that actually lets trains run slightly closer together instead of further apart like they do today. And then enhancing our parallel bus service. So we need to look at, and this is one of the questions for your group, your subcommittee, we need to look at, is there a possibility that we can serve all the needs and issues and problems that we've talked about with the Blue, Orange, and Silver lines by increasing bus service instead of having to build a new Metro Rail line? So that's going to be one of the alternatives that we put into the deep dive. So that's all the slides I'm going to share, but I will verbally tell you that right now we're trying to work with our stakeholders to narrow that down to four or five specific Metro Rail options. We're also almost finished crafting a bus-based alternative that will compare, just like we do with the Metro Rail lines, we're going to compare their performance in terms of meeting the four goals, in terms of ridership impacts, in terms of costs and benefits, and all of that will be done by the end of the summer or maybe early September. So we'll have the alternatives analysis we'll present to the public in the fall, a full range of like option one is this metro rail alignment. Here's the cost benefit ratio. Here's what it does, the benefits, the ridership impacts, the operational impacts, and how much it'll cost. Option two, option three, option four. And like I said, option five will be like an called a transportation systems alternative that focuses on doing this with bus service and maybe some rail ops, changes in rail operations, and no major capital investments. So that's what we'll be bringing out to the public in October, probably. Okay. So what I was hoping, Anu, for this group, I was hoping that we would have the bus-based alternative finished so that we could get, I could get feedback from your committee mm-hmm. on that alternative. But with all the schedule changes that have hit every agency everywhere, the project timeline got pushed back a little bit, so that's not quite ready.
Sure. No, that's understandable. Now, when you're ready for some questions, do let me know, Mark.
Sure. I'm finished.
You're okay.
So I'll stop sharing the screen too. Okay.
Sure. So Dr. Posner has a question. Dr. Posner, go ahead, please.
Hey, Mark. Two questions. On the bus alternatives, are you considering something similar to the Purple Line as a bus alternative? I know you're considering the express buses that are currently in service in some of the lines, but it's a lot less expensive to put in a surface line like the Purple Line, and it's a lot faster than buses. And those, they're basically streetcars on a line. And as a passenger, having used them in Phoenix and Seattle and San Francisco, that might be another alternative to the buses. It's more expensive than bus, but it's less expensive than rail. But as a passenger, it's more fun to use.
I agree. I think bus rapid transit in particular is an underappreciated and incredibly effective transit mode that doesn't get enough play in this region. You know, Metro, we have Metroway, so we actually have an existing version of BRT. But there's more that you can do with it. And to answer your question, I believe that our current version of the bus-based alternative has three bus rapid, like a core of three bus rapid transit lines, and then frequency improvements to express buses and local buses that connect to it or that connect directly downtown. So it does have a core of like three bus rapid transit lines.
Great, thank you. The other question I had is old New Yorker, where we had express trains and local trains. If you do the turnabout option, that would give you the option of giving you express trains into Foggy Bottom and then picking up at Stadium Armory and run the local trains through the core.
Yes, it'd probably be easier to do with off-peak service because the frequencies or the headways are so much higher off-peak. This has been talked about before at Metro, and people, with if you don't have the pocket track where you can take the right. train off the line, if you don't have that, our peak hour frequencies are too close together to express because there's always going to be a train at the station ahead of you. But to your point, yes, I do think that if we could pair a pocket track and a crossover with operational strategies off peak, we would be able to investigate some sort of express service. And one of the alternatives for Silver Line is north of I-66. One of those concepts I mentioned is meant to run express from McLean all the way to Georgetown with maybe one stop in the middle, but it's meant to be an express line.
Only other suggestion I would make to you is on the switchover, you put parallel line at Ross Lynn, that it'd be easier than doing the current orange, silver, blue move over to red that we have at Farragut West and Farragut North. It'd be more like the Times Square one where there's a tunnel that you can actually go through connected. For disability folks, making that switch from orange, blue, silver over to red at Farragut East and Farragut West and Farragut North and Farragut South is...
So you mean a pedestrian tunnel, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, yeah.
Or a device tunnel so wheelchairs can get through it.
That's a great point, thank you.
I'm off the line. Thank you.
Thank you. I am going to unmute everyone because we may have some people joining us through the phone calls. And I'm not sure if everyone is able to unmute themselves. So I will unmute everyone. And if anyone joining us through the phone call has any questions or comments, please do let us know now. Any other questions for Mark? Okay. Carol, go ahead, please.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining, Mark. And so I had a question about the completely new blue line. Could you talk about a little bit about what that would do to the station on how, because that's kind of the connection.
I'm sorry, Carol, you broke up right at the end. Talk a little bit more about how it does what?
How it connects to Roslyn Station.
Oh, sure. So to be honest, we're still at the conceptual level of design, so we haven't actually gone into the specific details of engineering that type of connection, but the intent is it would be a large and hopefully short pedestrian tunnel between the Roslyn 2 and the Roslyn Station. So they wouldn't be close enough that you could do like a cross-platform connection. People would have to get off the mezzanine and go through a pedestrian tunnel to the other station. But the intent is for it to be a subsurface pedestrian device tunnel, so that it does offer a direct connection between the two.
Okay. Until we get other questions, I wanted to share that whenever we do those type of connections that are rather long versus, because that would not be a short connection, it would be a tunnel.
Yeah.
The advisory committee has in the past mentioned that moving walkways are a good idea because at the Silver Line, for example, we have very long connections on bridges, but that moving walkway on those sort of bridges would be very difficult because they're exposed to the weather, and it would increase the size of the bridges. There'd be so many different things that we couldn't accomplish at the Silver Line. However, when you're doing an interior connection, that might be a good place to put a moving walkway because although it's still more difficult, it's protected from the weather.
Thank you.
Okay.
I took a note of that.
Dr. Posner has a question or comment. Dr. Posner, did you have a comment or question?
Well, I have a question.
Tino has a question.
The bus transformation project is complicated because it has to deal with 8 jurisdictions besides WMATA. How much less complicated is this? You're speaking as a WMATA person, and you're talking about going across all these jurisdictions. Will you have less of a governance problem being with WMATA than the folks at BT, the Bus Transformation Project, deal with?
Wow. Tino, that's an amazing question, and I hope I don't accidentally land myself in hot water. I don't think it's going to be any less complicated, to be quite honest. There are fewer jurisdictions involved. But not many. You know, this encompasses Loudoun, Fairfax, Alexandria, Arlington, D.C., and Prince George's. The only jurisdiction that's not directly involved as a stakeholder is Montgomery County. But at the end of the day, when we're ready, assuming we get consensus on a project and move that forward to WMATA's board, they're on WMATA's board, and they'll have to pay into the system, right, as part of the regional share. So they're still going to have a voice. I wouldn't say it's any less complicated. I would say the one benefit that we do have is that, unlike the bus transformation project, this is positioned as a metro study. And we've, from the very beginning, we've set up stakeholder groups. Like, I went through that slide. You know, Tino, because you've been invited to some. We're getting feedback at every step from those stakeholders and from the jurisdictions. But, you know, that feedback is from technical staff and, like, some executive level staff. I can't guess what's going to happen when it gets to the political level of actually, like, approving it or putting money on the table for it. That's anyone's guess. Well, but I will say that I think we've done, I've had feedback from the jurisdictional staff on these stakeholder committees that have been pretty positive about how well we've listened to them and how well, like, how we've responded to their input and responded to their requests. So I can honestly say I think we've done our best to build collaboration into the process, and I think that might make getting consensus easier. But I'm almost assuming that I'll be surprised by the politics at the end of it.
Since some of your options do not involve service into Maryland, and the state of Maryland is one of the big contributors, including the state of Virginia and the District of Columbia. Since some of your options don't deal with Maryland, why should they contribute to the options that leave them out?
Well,
new.
I can answer really briefly just in two things. One is that I tried to position the study, or WMATA tried to position the study to be objective, or as objective as possible, and to respond to the data and the problems that we found. So on one hand, the concept or the alternatives, the projects we put out there, have to have an objective data-driven basis. But the process to move from the alternatives to meet the set of projects to meet the purpose and need, but getting that to the selection of an LPA or a locally preferred alternative, that's an inherently political process. And one of the big metrics or performance measures that we have to meet to get there is stakeholder and public feedback. So if Maryland says there's no way that we're going to support option one because it doesn't help Maryland at all, then that's probably going to take option one off the table. But it's too soon to say that yet.
Last question.
Excuse me. I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but I believe we had one of the interpreters trying to make a comment. Mary Beth, did you?
We're just going to switch.
Could I jump in also, Anu?
Sure.
Just want to be in the queue.
Sure. Just give us a moment and we can switch in the meanwhile, and then we can resume up with our questions and answers. So, Mary Beth, go ahead and switch.
We're trying to.
Yeah, sure.
Go ahead.
Thank you. So we will continue
next
with Chair Calabia, followed by Anthony Oberg, and then
Patrick.
Mr. Sheehan.
Thank you.
Okay. My hand is up again.
Last one. There were about six options. Which of the options might require a new tunnel?
Well, all of the options, all the metro rail options would require some sort of subsurface connection. Five, because remember the first option is turnbacks. So that's not necessarily a new connection of any kind. But the Nova Circulator would require a new tunnel alignment from, like, Arlington Cemetery over to Courthouse, going through a New Roslyn 2 station, and then all of the other ones would require, they cross the Potomac River, would require a new tunnel.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Anthony?
I was only trying to draw attention to the interpreters, so Patrick can go next.
Oh.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Sheehan?
Thank you, yes. Admittedly, I was late to the meeting. Anu, very good job here. I assume we're going to get a copy of the recording?
Yes, the copy of the recording will be placed on the website as we do for all the meetings, yes.
Excellent. Thank you for that, so I can catch up on what I missed. Did we discuss how this would, and this goes along with what Tina was saying, did we discuss how this might improve transportation opportunities within Prince George's County?
Not specifically, but I can say that I think four of the options out of the six have an alignment that goes through Prince George's County. And just as I noted, we're not ready yet to release our more focused set or limited set of alternatives to the public. We have a big stakeholder meeting on the 29th. We're trying to get some more input on that. But I can tell you advisedly that the alternatives we intend to move forward would all serve Prince George's County in some way. I think it's important when our fourth goal is to expand access to opportunity and support for sustainable development, there's not a much bigger need in the region for access to economic opportunity than Eastern DC and Prince George's County. I don't think we could claim to have met that goal if we don't serve that area better.
Yeah, I agree with you, Mark. Thank you for a very good program here. I also agree with that, and I know that the entire committee and the subcommittee has voiced that many times, that Prince George's County seems to be losing more and more and more opportunity, transportation, bus, and it's an area that's hurting. So I think anything that we can do to help improve what is available in Prince George's County, the better it's going to be for the region.
Well, one thing that you all probably know, one of the most powerful things you could get in Prince George's County to help economically and with transportation is actually more development around the metro rail stations you already have, so more transit-oriented development. And Prince George's has done a really great job rezoning that recently, and I think they're still trying to finalize the zoning map changes, but the zoning text itself is good. It's a good change. So for those of you involved in Prince George's, keep your fingers crossed that market demand will follow the public sector zoning, because they did a great job with that.
Beautiful. Along That's good to know, lines, Mark. Thank you.
Along those lines, how many new stations would be involved? What is the range of numbers of new stations that would be involved, depending on which option is ultimately chosen?
Ooh, I'm sorry, Tina. I don't want to give you a number just because we're still doing the conceptual design. Okay. We need to be honest, just with the resource that we have, we need to get that limited set of alternatives before we really start deciding where stations should be, because we can't do that with like a full set of 18 to 20 alternatives.
Sure. But in any event, you said with each station, new station, commercial development and housing development would be an asset with new stations.
A requirement. We have to have a certain amount of density and people and jobs to justify running, building a new metro rail line or a station. So what we're trying to do, and this is kind of getting in the weeds, I know we don't have a lot of time left, but in trying to move from these concept ideas to that limited set of alternatives, we looked at current densities and tried to say it has to have at least, outside of the DC core, any line has to have at least the same density levels in population and jobs as the Silver Line does, at least. And hopefully it'll, by 2045, there's enough development opportunity to get it closer to our targets for metro rail service, which is higher than that. So I think I spiraled off a little bit, but what I'm basically saying is we have to come close to serving rail supportive densities now with the opportunity to get further development in the future.
Okay. Well, thank you.
So we will take one more question, and I believe Dr. Posner has his hand up. So Dr. Posner, go ahead, please.
This is just to address Tino's question about Maryland signing on. And if you just look at the history of the red line turnback at Grosvenor Strathmore, that was something that was purely for Montgomery County and for Maryland. And that was addressed financially, service-wise for passengers, and ability of staff to be able to do it with the schedule. Similar work went on with the Silver Line. And so as a regional service, they try not to be homers. And so any of the things that are going on now are going to be addressed by financial impact, service impact for everybody. And ultimately, if it's not a money loser, but a money maker, everybody benefits and it will eventually come in. But that's why it's a 25-year project.
Right.
As to where you get in. I mean, the zoning issues are going to be as difficult as the financial issues and everybody dealing with everything that goes on. But you move ahead and things have happened. We're going to Dulles Airport. There is no more turnaround at Grosvenor Strathmore. So be hopeful.
That's a great note to end on, Phil.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much, Mark. Appreciate it.
Thank you all.
Thank you for joining us, Mark. You have a good one. Stay safe.
You too. Same here.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Anu?
Yes.
Sorry about this. Is the interpreter speaking? I am not sure if Rico is still with us. Is he still with us?
Okay, let me check. One moment.
Just want to make sure he's not trying to get into the meeting.
You are absolutely right. We do not have Rico with us. Let me send him a quick email. So.
In the meanwhile, Anthony, if you can see the agenda, what's the next item?
And I knew if this is recording just voice only or is it picture as well?
Well, we will only be placing the audio on the website.
Yeah, the ombudsman report should be next, Tino.
Okay.
Thank you. Yes, Mike. Unmute wasn't unmuting. Thank you.
Sure. So, yes, as Dr. Posner said, the ombudsman report is on next. So, while I take a moment to email Rico, David can place himself.
Yeah, am I unmuted?
We can hear you, David.
Okay. My video just seems to be weird. I can't. Okay. Myself.
Are you trying to? Well, your video should be on. It should be on.
Video now stopped. I was talking back and forth, and it doesn't seem video now stopped.
From what I can tell, it's on, but I'm not sure what's happening at your end.
Yeah, I think my assistive technology is playing a little bit of havoc with it.
David, I think you have your thumb over the camera because it's on. And we're just seeing a black screen. So I would bet that either the camera is pointed to something black or your thumb is over the camera.
No, I don't think so. It's a separate webcam sitting on top of the computer. I was having this problem occasionally on another call. So anyway, I'll just go ahead. I'm not trying to hide from you.
Okay. Go ahead.
One of the issues that was raised at the AC meeting and earlier at this meeting was the front door loading of customers with disabilities. And I've been monitoring that with the management and the bus department. I had a few complaints about it when we first started the rear door opening. And in response to those, they took a lot of steps. First, there's a NTO notice to operators that specifically makes it clear to all the operators that they have to extend the ramp when requested or necessary. And they've been, you know, talking about that in the meetings they have. And they've also asked the street supervisors in response to my request to go out and observe and make sure that this is happening. So since they've taken those steps in the last couple weeks, I have not seen any more complaints about the issue. And I think I would if they'd been occurring. Actually, we haven't been getting a lot of complaints, period, during this time, but those are some of the ones that I was starting to get. So I'm pretty happy with their response on that. And if anybody hears of it still being a problem, shoot me an email and I can address it.
David, you mentioned that some paper or document was shared with the drivers regarding helping people with wheelchairs get on. Could you share that document with all of us?
I'll have to check. It's an internal notice to operators. I don't see why it couldn't be made public, but I just want to run it by them before I publish it to you and therefore the world.
Well, we're part of the family.
It writes what it says, and it's very clear about these requirements. But I'll get back to you on that.
Okay.
The second issue, we missed, I believe, Jim Hamry's talk about the summer shutdown, but we are considering starting it early, in early May, to take advantage of opportunities and also to catch up because we've lost several weeks' progress on it. I was hoping to find out more about that today, but I haven't heard yet. But that is a possibility. But regardless of that, I've been talking with Chris Colbert, and we're planning to do the same flexible metro access eligibility that we did during the summer shutdown last summer and allow people to get metro access without going through the formal process for the duration of the shutdown. Would be something like temporary eligibility for that period. And then if they want it after things are back to normal in September, then, you know, we would go back to the regular procedures. So we're going to work. Chris and I talked today and we're working on a communication strategy for that. So if you all have any input on groups in Northern Virginia that this should be communicated to, please send
them
to Anu so she can follow up with me. Mm-hmm. Because we are... I'm sorry, my jaws keeps going off and on. Things are happening. They are going to have a more abbreviated communication package than normal right now because there's so fewer people riding, and also because if we do move it up, then they have very little time to get the customer piece out. But I will be looking at all that for accessibility, hopefully before it gets out, if not quickly thereafter. And we'll be including some information about this at that time. So if there are groups that you think should get this kind of information in Northern Virginia along the Orange Line, let me know and we can add them to what we're doing. So those are the only two issues I have. Are there any questions?
I thought I saw Steve Kafin raise his hand. No, I don't.
I've been fighting with power right here, so I switched from my cell phone to the desktop, which doesn't have a face. And you may suddenly lose the face, but you'll have me on the
0228-56132 has left the meeting.
Well, we still see you, so that's
okay. We see you.
Hey, David.
Hey.
You know, I had my hand up.
Oh, sorry, Phil.
Yeah. Two questions. One is for Carol, and I promised to ask this for Denise. You were going to have somebody check the accessibility of the Hilton Hotel's restrooms, and she wondered whether you had had a chance to find out if there were ones that were accessible at the Hilton. You're muted.
Yeah, I'm trying to unmute. I'm sorry. Yes, Phil, I did go and check the accessibility of the Hilton. And you were right, the doors are a little heavy to open, and but they're apparently working on that. And there are other accessible restrooms in the building.
That's great. I just wanted to ask that for Denise. For David, the question I have is on the shutdowns, as they did on the shutdowns on the Red Line, will the Metro access fares be all based on bus fares since there are no rail stations that are going to be running when they're shut down?
I imagine so, since if your trip would take you only on bus, but that's, you know, we'd have to double check the fare calculator, but the fare calculator should produce that result automatically. If that's the best.
We'll hope so. I'll ask that again next week at Metro Access when it happens, but it's something that would be good to follow up to make sure that they are being charged bus fares rather than rail fares for any trips in that direction.
And I will say that is the plan. That's what happened with last summer's shutdown, so we anticipate the same this summer as well.
Super. Thank you so much. I will sleep easily tonight.
Would I be in the queue?
Yes, you're on next. Thank you.
Thank you. This is Pat. Two questions for David. David, I know we talked last year a little bit about whether IRA was going to be instituted as part of the accessibility solution for the shutdown last year. Don't know if that's being considered this year. That's first question. Second question is, I'm doing what Phil just did, sneaking in another question, Metro Access question, since you brought it up. For those individuals who need to be recertified over the next couple of months, what are we doing about those individuals? Will they be automatically extended for a period of time? Because
yes.
Yeah.
Is that a yes?
Do we know? That's a yes. Yes, they've been, they're being automatically extended until there's such time that we can reevaluate them.
Good. Okay. That's great. That'll help a bunch of people who are concerned about that. I'll let them know. David, do we have anything? Are we considering the use of IRA in the summer shutdown starting in May?
Well, it was in discussions, and I had just I'd set up a meeting to go over this issue right at the time everything started closing down and I had some other unrelated medical issues and the meeting didn't happen. And with Jim Hamry, he's very open to it, but we've got to find the money for it. And as I understand, you know, budgets are now very tight surrounding this project. So I'm happy to revisit with them, and thank you for reminding me.
Okay.
But
and that's good, David. So you'll work that internally and then let us know what can be done.
Yeah, I'll see what I can do.
Good. Okay. Thank you, David.
This might be raised with the ombudsman, who is in many other institutions an advocate on behalf of, for example, we, the people of disabilities and seniors. It gets back to the question that Kelly raised before, and there's been two meetings on it, and I think you understand the principle involved, which is that while most riders have the ability to pay in advance, reserve parking places at Metro stations up until 9 o'clock. it's not true that people with disabilities are able to or permitted to reserve parking places that are accessible. Carol, you're going to look into that?
Yes.
Do you have any suggestions, David, as their ombudsman, if you type add to it too?
Okay.
And I am on today. I wasn't in the initial roll call. I think I missed it by a couple of minutes, but Kelly Simoneau is on.
Good. Kelly, maybe you want to abbreviate the situation sometimes maybe you as a person who discovered the problem would best be able to describe it.
Sorry, unmuting myself, Kelly Simoneau. I'm happy to, or if Carol, if they have talked about it internally and have any updates as well, then maybe that would be a good place to start.
Okay. Well, if you would like, the issue was, as you said, Tino, that there is reserved parking, but there's no parking that's accessible with an access aisle for somebody who needs an access aisle and has a disability. So we have looked into it internally in our office, and we have prepared recommendations, and we're still working internally to try to move that forward to see if we can provide accessible parking that is reserved, that has access aisles. We heard you loud and clear, and we are working on it, but we don't have all the details as of now. We have to look into where it's gonna happen, how it's gonna happen, how we're gonna roll it out.
Dr. Posner has his hand up. Dr. Posner?
He is muted.
Hey.
I think Phil's—
Sorry, I should have taken my hand down.
Oh, okay.
It's down now.
All right. Any other questions?
Steve,
any recommendations that you're prepared to make to WMATA?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Sorry, this is Kelly Simoneau. Are you prepared? Are you able to share any of the recommendations that you will be sharing with WMATA?
Well, we are trying to get some accessible parking to be labeled as reserved parking. And as I had shared before, most of our stations, we have a lot of accessible parking, and that's never been an issue. So that those stations will not be, I do not consider them as big of a problem. So what we have to do is figure out how to put them in stations that are actually, that have very small numbers of spaces for everyone. And to see that, we're still dealing with the Office of Park and trying to figure out how we're going to make this happen. It seems it's not a simple solution. We have to figure out how we're going to be able to enforce all of this, because anytime there's a lack of accessible parking, people with disabilities just park anywhere in our system. So we have to figure out how to make it work, but we're working on it for sure.
But recall that the point is not to have just accessible parking, but to allow people with disabilities to reserve that parking by paying in advance and knowing that they'd have to be there by 9 o'clock. That right, that privilege, other drivers already have. People with disabilities do not. And our point is to ensure that each station not just have parking spaces for people with disabilities, but are enabled to reserve them in advance like other riders are.
Yes, that would involve more information. Oh, I think the interpreter is asking me to hold. 1 second, please.
Rico just said he was back. I just want to make sure he can see us.
He just joined back, yes.
Yeah.
Steve has
a... Gary, or you want to go, or you want me to go? Okay. Can you see Carrie?
Okay, we're good to go.
Okay, my answer is yes. I am aware that it's reserved parking for people with disabilities that we're talking about, and we are going to look into how we're going on our website, how we're going to present that opportunity to identify that that's you're a person with a disability that requires an access aisle. We're working on all the phases of it, to make those recommendations, but we're still working on this.
What seems to be the roadblock?
Oh, there is no roadblock. It's not something we can just say, go, and it's done. We have to work on it. And in WMATA, even putting signage, you have to develop the sign. We have to do a lot of detailed research. So I will be able to give you an update again. But we are working on it. I just want you to know that.
The update again.
This is Kelly Simoneau. Thank you, and I hope you all continue to update us as I know this is developing.
What is it again, Kelly?
I just said. This is Kelly. I just said. Thank you for the update, and I hope that they'll continue to give us progress reports as they work it through the system.
Test.
Steve, you had a question?
Yes, but it's on another topic. I have lost my cell phone. I'm on my desktop without a picture. So... Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes.
We can hear you.
Oh, good. I'm wondering about the next bus information, particularly on cell phones. And I ask that whether it's operating or not. The reason is that the information always says as per schedule. And I'm not sure whether it's a correct schedule. What's particularly important about this is people are waiting more extended periods of time for their buses and on modified Sunday schedules. I thought the buses had a mechanism to actually keep the more exact next bus times and provide them, but I'm not sure that's being done. It was more of an inquiry to see whether, in fact, it is being done, and if not, why isn't it possible?
Well, I'll look into that. Generally, if it says to you that per schedule, that means either the bus is AVO or the next bus system is not working. Yeah. So I'll find out this week which of those is the case or both.
Yeah, why I ask is that we have a schedule to go by, but I think the announcement was made that it's a modified Sunday schedule. But the fail-safe is that I believe the buses are equipped with mechanisms to provide also that real-time information, and I'm wondering whether or not that system is working.
Right, that's the question. They have AVO, automatic vehicle locators on them that tie into that system and GPS, but sometimes that's not working if we've got unusual things going on, like we do right now. So I'll look into that and get an answer for you.
All right, great. Thank you, David. Thank you.
Okay, at this point it is 5:53. We have approximately 7 more minutes for the meeting. We have gone through the ombudsman report. Next on the agenda was public comment period. If I may just make this announcement for any individual who would like to give us their public comments, they can do so by writing to an email, and the email is
One moment. The email is, oh, give me a moment. I'll have to give that in a moment. They can either call us at 202-962-1100 or send us an email at metroaacchair@wmata.com. It's all one word, metroaacchair@wmata.com. Give us your feedback, and we will share any public comment with the respective individuals, offices, and respond to the customers. And we'll be, and that public comments will be shared with the committee members as well. Just to let you know, this information is also posted on our website on the Accessibility Advisory Committee page, on the subcommittee pages, as well as on the calendar pages. Page for the full committee as well as the subcommittee meetings.
Before we close up, I want to mention again what the status is of WMATA's frontline workers in this contagion of COVID-19. When I last looked, there are 24 confirmed cases, 9 of which are bus operators. That means that over a third of the victims of coronavirus are bus operators. Mm-hmm. To me, when I saw this announcement about better visible shields for bus operators and what happened to the one who videotaped a rider in Detroit and then died afterwards, and then the other kinds of assaults that have been inflicted upon bus riders here in D.C. And maybe other parts of the jurisdiction. I really am concerned that we do what we can to try and reduce or eliminate these dangers to our bus operators and to other workers who are frontline, the Metro Police, for example. So that's what I hope that people will keep in mind as we get into 4 minutes left. Anyone else have some comments on COVID-19 or other items?
Hi, this is Bea. I just wanted to share a follow-up from what a comment that Patrick had made about eligibility and contact. Please know that there is a telephone number and a website or email address that customers can use. So customers can contact the Office of Eligibility at eligibility@wmata.com. Or if they don't have access to the internet, they can leave us a voicemail at 202-962-2701, and we will follow back up with you.
Thank you, Bea.
Thank you, Dr.
No problem.
Steve here?
We have a hand up.
You can't see me.
A quick comment from Rico. For that information, do you have access to text for that?
Not at this. He wanted to know, this is B, he wanted to know if the option was to text. We don't have that currently available. It is the email address or it is by phone.
Okay.
We have 3 minutes left. Another question over there.
This is Phil. Just want to compliment Anu and Tina. This is a really smooth meeting, much better than I did at AAC. And keep up the good work for next Monday.
Well, thank you. Absolutely. That was our first meeting. So I think with every meeting we improve.
Anu?
Yeah.
I like being
I don't want to go back.
Anu?
Yes, Marybeth.
This is the interpreter speaking. I just want to also say that this was a very smooth meeting from the interpreter's perspective, and we want to I personally want to say thank you so very much for everyone's patience while we were switching interpreters, just allowing us to be able to continue for a 2-hour time stint. It was really wonderful. So thank you guys very much. And we're happy to serve you guys. And if you need anything else, please just let us know. I know I personally am happy to see many familiar faces. And so thank you guys.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Okay.
It is now 5:58. Last questions or points to make? Otherwise, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Any opposing votes? Not hearing any opposition. This meeting is hereby adjourned. Thank you again, Anu.
You're most
welcome.
Thank you,
Anu.
Thank you, everyone, for joining. And we will see you next Monday for the Metro Access meeting. Board is all ready for that, I'm sure.
Yes.
I will be.
You know, I have emailed you the information on the safety committee.
Sorry, repeat that, Dr. Posner?
I was telling Tino to check his email. I sent him a website.
Thanks, Phil.
Okay.
Bye-bye, all.
Bye.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye. Just look out for my email for next week. Stay healthy and stay safe.
Leave meeting button. Do it.
Thank you, Anu.
Thank you.
Anu, excellent work. Thank you.
Thank you, Kel.